The committee room was occupied by the proclaiming committee of the NCOP, the very big proclaiming committee. Let's start with apologies.
Apology from Ms. Mutingo. She is attending another meeting.
There's a letter also from the minister. He's not available to appear before the committee today. This is due to cabinet meeting, where he's also expected to give an update on the following matters: areas experiencing challenges which strongly provincial boundaries, addresses, harvesting initiative, and assignment of the interests dwelling without addresses in the country. It's a big challenge that he's facing. He wanted to be here because we requested the minister to come, but the executive wanted him also to go there and brief them. And in terms of our agenda, we put it at the end. But because we don't know, we don't control the cabinet. We don't know even what time the meeting is going to start. What are the issues? I know that all of us, we wanted the minister to appear before us and therefore other questions. He's not available. He has, of course, committed himself to available. The date, we are still waiting on the date. Yeah. Amelia.
Chair, can I express my extreme concern about this? We've changed the date twice to accommodate the minister. Twice to accommodate him. He was supposed to come last week, and we changed it. Then it was supposed to be yesterday, and we changed it to today to accommodate him. Now, I think it's time that the minister appears before this committee and that there's no more softball with him. He must appear before the committee. It's a requirement. And I think he must stop ducking and diving. And in his letter there, he talks about address harvesting. Address harvesting is the responsibility of the IEC. The IEC falls under Home Affairs. So I don't know what that's got anything to do with the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. I'm really angry about this, Chair. Really, really angry.
Has made time available for it. He really wanted to come here because he thinks that he must come and clarify all the issues that have been raised. And of course, when he's instructed by the leadership to go and brief them on other issues, the addresses for everyone in South Africa who are registered voter is a bigger challenge. Surely, I think the executive wants to have a discussion about this. The other matters, maybe we have to bring the executive. But as far as I know, the minister is more than prepared to come and appear before the committee. We are going again through the PLO, ensure that next time, I think the minister wanted to be available on the 28th, yeah? On the 28th, he has cancelled many things because he thinks that is very important for him to come here, clarify all the issues, engage with us as a committee. Of course, Deputy Minister Papele is not also here because he's addressing the traditional leaders there together with the Department of Rural Development. And Honorable Deputy Minister Nell also is sent to address other meetings around the integrated urban development framework. But I can guarantee you, Honorable MLM, that the minister is more than willing to come and account. Absolutely, I would be surprised how much he's happy to appear before this committee to address some of these issues. Because he's very worried that if issues are not addressed on time, they cause unnecessary problems. I think it's more than willing on the 28th table. On the 28th, the minister is coming before the committee. And
The 28th is for a briefing on the electricity crisis in municipalities. That's what's on our program.
No, that one will be changed for you to accommodate the issues that you're all worried about.
So we're going to ignore the electricity crisis in municipalities,
you put
Chair?
It towards the end because you need enough time with the minister to have it.
Chair, I'm happy to sit here all day tomorrow, all day Friday, to meet with the minister.
we'll try to locate time for him now. I know that Nesbitt is going overseas. He's not available. But he's very willing to come and account. He's a young minister, more than willing and energized to come and account. And I think let us give him that. And then he's going to appear before the committee. If the committee is willing to meet whatever date, I think the minister will be able to come. I will talk to the PLO after this and ensure that the minister comes. Minister was ready to come and engage with Honorable Melham and ourselves here. It will be a nice engagement, Melham, I can guarantee you, that the minister is much more prepared. We won't protect anyone here. Everyone must come. I think that's what we are going to do, Honorable Melham. Thank you very much. Apologies submitted. Can we move then to receive the briefing by the National Disaster Management Commission? Doctor, I'm sure that will assist us. And of course, you do have a team. It's up to you really how you want to make a presentation. Of course, the introduction of your team is always very appreciated. And then we can then allow you space to brief us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members, colleagues, and the support team. We are deeply appreciative of the opportunity to brief the committee about the annual report of the National Disaster Management Center as produced in terms of Section 24 of the Disaster Management Act. Furthermore, we appreciate that this happens the era where we can realize the changing climate and the impact that it is having on the increasing disaster risk in the country, implying that the content of the report will be important to highlight how the country is gearing itself to managing the effect of the changing climate as it impacts on development. Furthermore, that the report will also reflect on the implementation of the fire services in terms of the Fire Brigade Services Act, which is also within the National Disaster Management Center, and that the structure of the report will highlight how we balance proactive and reactive measures to dealing with disasters. That means proactive as in reducing risk developmentally, and of course responding when there is a need to do so. And that, honorable members, it covers both annual performance plan projects which have already been presented as part of the Department of Cooperative Governance annual report, as well as non-APP projects which were not included in that presentation. And lastly, that the presentation will be shared among the two colleagues. Firstly, starting off with the APP and non-APP projects by Ms. Annette Brewer, and then the funding aspects will be presented by Modi Radikonyana. Just to introduce the team, I'm supported by Ms. Annette Brewer, sitting on my left. She's the Chief Director responsible for legislation, policy, and compliance management. And on my right, Ms. Modi Radikonyana, the Chief Director responsible for risk reduction and response coordination. And at the back is Mr. Lloyd Petru, is working in the fire services section, dealing with the Fire Brigade Services Act. And Mr. Jochen Stasel, responsible for policy and legislation development and implementation systems, and our colleague from the DG's office, Lebohang, who's a common person in this committee. So I'm going to, Chairperson, hand over to my colleague, Anna, to take the committee through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It is a privilege for us to be here to present the annual report of the NDMC, and that is for the year 2016-17. So that is basically the purpose of the presentation today, and also to focus a little bit on the specifically on the assistance on all disaster expenditure and the relief by the Disaster Management Center that will be done by my colleague Madi. So basically the presentation talks to three parts, and firstly it is the basic content and layout of the annual report, then the submission of the report to Parliament and the process that goes with that, and then also part three with regards to distribution of the report to provincial and municipal disaster management centres. So those are process issues. Part one then talks about the legislative obligation, basically the overview of the minister, the head of the centre, that is basically what you'll see the content of the annual report is. Chapter 1 to 5, which describes specific things that are described in the legislation, and then an overview in Chapter 6 of the disaster management plans, and Chapter 7, the national coordination. So in terms of the legislative obligation, in terms of Section 24 of the Disaster Management Act, the National Centre has a specific requirement to report on its activities annually to the Minister, and the contents of the report is prescribed in the legislation. It talks about the activities of the year, it talks about the results of monitoring and prevention and mitigation initiatives, talks about disasters that occurred during the year in each province, the classification, magnitude and severity of these disasters, the effects they had, and also on a particular problems that we experienced in dealing with the disasters. The way that we these problems were addressed and any recommendations made with regard to that, and then also the progress on the preparation of disaster management plans, which is a requirement in terms of the disaster management legislation for all organs of state. And then lastly, an evaluation of the implementation of those plans and strategies. If we look at the overview of the foreword by the Minister, it basically highlights the concerns of government regarding the impact of the ongoing drought, which we've been experiencing quite extensively. And specifically the social, environmental, and economic sectors of our country and the SADC region. And it calls for stakeholders to work together to mitigate the effects of the drought. So it basically says that that we all need to work together to mitigate the effects. He also emphasizes the need for strong and robust institutions to drive the disaster management agenda to be advanced through the establishment of the Intergovernmental Committee on Disaster Management, which is a national committee that is chaired by him, and then the need for continuity in leadership as a key component of any government program, and in that he welcomes the new head of the National Disaster Management Center, Dr. Tao, who commenced his services on the 1st of January of this year. Then we have the overview of the head of the Disaster Management Center, Dr. Tao, and he basically gives a summary of our activities in the National Disaster Management Center and emphasizing that the responsibility for disaster funding lies primarily with an organ of state responsible for the maintenance of infrastructure, specific infrastructure relating to the function. He also talks about the development and adoption of two guidelines, which was quite significant, to support the implementation of the disaster management legislation. The one guideline is on minimum infrastructure requirements of the Disaster Management Center, and the second one is the development and structure of a disaster management plan. He also It gives an overview of the celebration of the UN International Day for Disaster Risk Reduction. It talks about the ongoing coordination of the response to drought and also the collaboration and coordination within international stakeholders. Then we go to Chapter 1, which provides general information about the National Disaster Management Center. And basically gives an overview and objective of the branch, what is our legislative and other mandates. It gives a strategic overview of our strategic objectives, the branch objectives, the organizational structure, the expenditure trends, and some international engagements that we have engaged on. Chapter 2 talks about the activities of the National Disaster Management Center, and how it is organized within the four chief directorates. The first one being a legislative and policy management, which has the main responsibility to develop disaster management and fire services policies, legislative frameworks and guidelines derived from the Act and the framework, and also the Fire Brigade Services Act. It also provides support to stakeholders on the implementation of the policies and frameworks across the sectors and spheres of government. And in that unit, the guidelines and things like that are being developed. The second chief directorate is Disaster Risk Reduction, Capacity Building and Intervention, who is developing and implementing disaster management operational systems and also coordinates disaster management capacity building and strategic research across the spheres of government. I just need to mention that this is for the past financial year, which is 16-17, and we have had some little bit of realignment within these organizational capacity. Then we have the Chief Directorate Integrated Provincial Disaster Management Support, Monitoring and Evaluation Systems, who develops and implements an integrated system to monitor and evaluate the effectiveness and performance of disaster management and fire services. And then lastly, the Information Technology, Intelligence and Information Management Systems Unit, who guides the development of a comprehensive information management and communication system and establishes integrated communication links with all disaster management role players. So basically in Chapter 2 you can see the details of the various operational projects that we have embarked on over the past financial year.
Section 24 of the Disaster Management Act requires that the annual report be tabled in Parliament. Now, I haven't seen the actual annual report, and I'm not aware of it being tabled. It's very difficult when we're working on an overview of the annual report to know what the detail is underneath that overview. Is there a reason why we don't have the actual annual report?
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'll request my colleague to clarify that process which has been embarked upon in respect of your question. I'll add if there's anything.
Thank you very much. The annual report is actually in the system on our mailroom. It was tabled on the 3rd of October. It does appear on the ATC as such.
Do you have that
thing? I think that is, of course, there should be some copies. You give it to members, one or two copies there, because I know that many members, they don't have the copy of the finance report.
We never repeat the report.
I can even organize that members get it now. I'll go to the stores. Of course.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry to interrupt.
Thank you. chapter 3 then talks to the results of monitoring of prevention and mitigation initiatives undertaken by disaster management stakeholders across the country, and it gives a breakdown of those activities. So I think this brings me to the part that has got more detail with regards to the disasters, and that is chapter 4, where I hand over to my colleague, Ms. Marie Radikonyana.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. I will take you through chapter 4, which will be speaking to the request that you've tabled before us to indicate the assistance on all classified and declared disasters and also the expenditure of the allocated funding to the affected organs of state. Chapter 4 provides details of the state of disasters declared, disasters classified, and their effects. We had the Gauteng province, whereby the Merafung local city local municipality declared a state of disaster. And it was the type of disaster was basically on the sinkhole formation that has damaged some key infrastructure within the area and also threatens the life of the community members. And what happened is that the NDMC allocated funding from the municipal disaster grant for the emergency repairs on the sinkholes and the damaged infrastructure. And that has taken two processes whereby in 2016-17 we have allocated the emergency grant funding, and the second process is where we then allocate funding for reconstruction and rehabilitation processes. We had Eastern Cape province, whereby the district municipality Jokabi and Over Tambo. Jokabi declared disaster as a result of oil spillage. However, as NDMC, when we went there to classify, we realized that it doesn't qualify to be declared a disaster. What we did, we then assisted them to coordinate with all the key stakeholders that are responsible for the matter and looking at ensuring that applicable legislation is implemented. Those were the Department of Environmental Affairs and Water and Sanitation. With regards to the Over Tambo District Municipality, they declared a local state of disaster as a result of floods. So what happened is that as NDMC, we assisted them in getting all the national stakeholders together, and we mobilize all the national and provincial resources. And as you speak, the resources have been mobilized, and the provincial treasury has then allocated a certain amount of funding so that they can address the situation. And in addition to that, our Department of Rural Development and Land Reform also provided immediate relief in the form of emergency shelters. We had all provinces declaring a drought within 16-17. And as NDMC, we've got a coordinating structure that is called the National Joint Drought Coordination Committee, which assisted in mobilizing resources through the reprioritization process to respond to the effects of drought and water shortages. And allocation of additional resources to agriculture and water sector for drought intervention measures was also allocated after those sectors indicated to NDMC that they have exhausted and depleted their resources. Moving to next slide, the implementation of intervention measures during the period of reporting was done in two phases. Phase one, it was when we did the reprioritization, especially on the issue of the drought process, where provinces declared a provincial state of drought. And when we moved to phase two, that's when we then look at financial contribution from the disaster grant within the DCOG. So the details are as follows: that phase one, what we did is the reprioritization. Then we also had contribution by the private sector and non-governmental organization. As the National Joint Drought Coordination Committee, we then felt that we need to have a coordination task team that will be coordinating the resources that were provided by private sector and NGOs to ensure that there's proper allocation of resources within the provinces that have been affected. Technical support was provided to provinces and municipalities, and that has been done with all the sector departments, and MISA from our department was also assisting us in that regard. The water use management and conservation measures, and that was expected from all sector departments, and Water Affairs was also lead, Water and Sanitation, my apologies, was also leading in that regard. Contribution by private sector, I'm sorry of the repetition, was done, and also we ensured that as the task team, as the coordinating team, we monitored the conditions on the ground to ensure that each and every affected sector is being given attention. It is important to indicate that the agriculture and the water sector also submitted to us when we go to phase two that they have they requested additional funding since their conditions didn't improve on the ground, and therefore what we did as NDMC, we then coordinated with National Treasury to request funding, and in September funding was provided by National Treasury, whereby an amount of 212 million was then provided for livestock feed within the agricultural sector. An amount of 341 million was also then allocated within the water sector to provide for a mobile desalination plant and water tankering in the affected provinces. And the details of the funding is as follows in the next slide. Within the water services, water and sanitation sector, the following provinces received the funding, or they benefited for the funding of the one that we have allocated, and this is in millions. Eastern Cape received 8.6 million for water tankering and storage. Free State received 42.2 million for water tankering and storage. KZN KwaZulu-Natal received 290.7 million to procure the mobile desalination plant. In total, the amount that was transferred or allocated to the Department of Water and Sanitation was 341 million. With regard to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Eastern Cape received 29 million for livestock feed. Free State received 31 million. KwaZulu-Natal received 23 million. Limpopo received 28 million. Northern Cape received 25 million. Mpumalanga received 26 million. Northwest received 38 million. Western Cape received 12 million. And all this funding that has been transferred to all the organs of state has been reported fully spent. So moving to the grant allocation during 2016 and 17 by the Division of Revenue Act, within the three grants that we are having within NDMC, the Municipal Disaster Grant, we were allocated 269 million, and the Provincial Disaster Grant were allocated 111 million. The Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant, which is basically for the municipalities that deals with the reconstruction and rehabilitation process, we allocated 140 million. Expenditure of the disaster grants during the financial year of 2016-17, out of the 269 million from the municipal disaster grant funding, we have spent 180 million, which was allocated to the Mirafun City Local Municipality to address the sinkhole formation occurrences, which caused damage to critical infrastructure within the municipality. So far, the municipality has spent 117.8 million, and they had a balance of 265,688,000. So that funding, in actual fact, they had to return it to National Treasury because it's the balance of the total amount that was transferred to them. And with regard to Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant, there are five municipalities that have benefited from this disaster recovery grant as a result of the flooding that they incurred. The KwaZulu-Natal, we have three municipalities, that is Vulametlo, which now is, the funding was then transferred to Umdoni as a result of the demarcation process. And we've got Vulametlo, which has received 30 million. They have spent the amount because we also have went there to do the on-site visit, but we are still awaiting the final report from the municipality. Umzumbe received 10 million. We are also still awaiting the report. They have spent their amount. Mnambithi, which is now called Alfred Duma, have received 50 million. We are still awaiting the report, but the three municipalities have spent they fully spent the amount, and we did the on-site visit in those municipalities. Nkomazi in the Mpumalanga province, they received 20 million. They have spent the amount. However, we are still waiting for the closeout reports from them. And Hesakua within the Western Cape, they have received 30 million and we're still awaiting for the closeout report. They have fully spent the amount. So we always remind them on a monthly basis, basis because we have to report to National Treasury with regard to the expenditure. So we are only awaiting the reports from these municipalities. With regard to the provincial disaster grant, no expenditure was incurred due to the reprioritization process by the audience of state, mainly during the drought process. So the NDMC facilitated funding from the National Treasury through the budget adjustment process for the following organs of state that I've alluded to, which is the Department of Water and Sanitation and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, whereby an amount of 553 million was allocated, and Department of Water and Sanitation was allocated 341 million that I have alluded to in the previous slide, and agriculture received 212 million. So this is, again, the breakdown to indicate how that they have fully spent the amount. Moving to slide 20 on Chapter 5. Chapter 5 reflects on some legislative compliance issues and challenges faced by organs of state across the spheres of government in implementing the disaster management legislation, which includes the details of the annual report received from the provincial disaster management centers, municipal disaster management centers, national organs of state and other entities, and provincial organs of state. The functionality of the disaster management advisory forums, which was also indicated as some of the compliance issues and challenges that are faced by the organs of state, the disaster risk reduction capacity building and interventions by the stakeholders, and also capacity building initiatives. The chapter on the overview of the disaster management plan, which is Chapter 6, provides a list of the disaster management plans that were submitted during the period of 2016-17 to the NDMC, whereby as the NDMC, we then started coming up with a task team that will be looking at the analysis and the assessment of the disaster management plans. So this is the list of the disaster management plans that we received. From the Western Cape province, we received the Sustainable Water Management Plan, Provincial Drought Plan, and we received the National Nuclear Plan that is in the process of being reviewed by the Department of Energy, the Disaster Management Plan from Telkom, the Disaster Management Plan for the Department of Human Settlements, where, as we speak, we had about three engagements to try and assist them to improve their plan, Social Disorder Hazard Disaster Management Plan from the City of Cape Town, which we have even given them feedback on our analysis and assessment, the disaster management from ESCOM, where we had an engagement with them to indicate the issues that they need to really work on, the disaster management plan from the Free State Department of Social Development, we have made inputs to the department, the freight rail disaster management plan, which is Transnet, the National Oil Spill Contingency Plan, which is within the Operation Pakisa, and it's been submitted by the Department of Transport, Quebec Emergency Preparedness Plan, coming from the Western Cape Provincial Disaster Management Center, the Winter Contingency Plan from the Gauteng Provincial Disaster Management Center, the Disaster Management Plans from Mfulweni Local Municipality, Lephalale Local Municipality, and the Climate Change Vulnerability Disaster Management Plan from Etlanzeni District Municipality. So those are the plans that we have received within 2016-17, and we have made inputs to some of them, and others we're still working on them. I think that's the end of my part of the presentation, Chairperson. And thank you very much, honorable members.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Doctor. Your concluding remarks?
Chair, there's just three slides which I would request my colleague to conclude with, and then I can just do the closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you again. Okay, then Chapter 7 is basically talking about the national coordination of disaster management across the spheres of government. And in terms of the legislation, there is prescribed structures that need to be put in place. So it talks about the structure of national disaster management coordination. It talks about the Governmental Committee on Disaster Management that was established by the President and also announced in the Government Gazette, the National Disaster Management Forum, which is a technical advisory forum of all stakeholder departments, that meets on a quarterly basis to talk about issues of disaster management, and then also the National Joint Drought Coordination Committee. I think Marty has alluded to its functioning to specifically deal with the drought issues across the country. And then also it mentions our participation in intergovernmental and other coordinating structures. So those include, of course, our international engagements, where we also are signatory to some of the international commitments. Part two, then, of the presentation is just one slide that talks to the submission of the annual report to Parliament. And I think that question has already been answered. In terms of our legislation, the Minister must submit a report to Parliament within 30 days, which he has done, and after he has received it from the National Centre. This obligation has been fulfilled, and we also have tabled the report to Parliament in terms of the prescribed processes of Parliament. Then, part three is then basically the distribution of the annual report to provincial and municipal disaster management centres, which is also a requirement of our legislation. And we have done that. We have provided a copy of the report to our provincial disaster management centres and also municipal disaster management centres. It is also available online for the general public to access that, and we also have the report available electronically for various stakeholders. So basically that concludes our overview of the annual report.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Doctor.
Thank you very much, and honorable members. I think in concluding, Chair, just to state the fact that all this work that has been presented and also is contained in detail in the report is also a culmination of the hands-on support and leadership that we are receiving from our Minister, Honourable Minister Van Rooyen, and the guidance that is also been received continually from the committee is appreciated. Furthermore, that it can be seen from the report that the monitoring of projects for responding to disasters is quite key and is one of the areas that we give priority, so that implementation of response and recovery does not create further risk, implying that we should build resilience as we respond to this incident. So we want to put it on record that that is an area we emphasize. Also that there's a slide 21 on disaster plans that we coordinate. This demonstrates how integrated we have to be in supporting disaster reduction issues, working with all the sectors, and we try within our limited capacity to ensure that we provide that kind of leadership to the sectors on disaster plans that must be in place to reduce risk in their areas. Also that when you go into the detail of the report, there are programs that advance risk reduction, including the bursary program that we also administer, the awareness work that we carry out, which I think honorable members will also find comfort in that we also prioritize risk reduction. So on that note, Chair, we once more thank you for the opportunity, and we are officially ending the presentation and will be guided by you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor, and the team for the presentation. Honorable Melham, now we are happy with our report. I see a very nice report.
Very nice.
Did you have one?
For now.
Are you happy now?
For
questions. Okay. We'll open for questions, honorable members. We invite questions and the engagement. And then, honorable Melham.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the NDMC for their report. And as I said, it is a very nice looking report. I haven't gone through it in detail. I need to do that. I've flipped through it and I've gone through the slides. But thank you for that. A couple of questions. The first one is, a year ago when you were here, we were talking about amending the Fire Services Act. And I'd like to know what the status is of that amendment. In particular, I am concerned, I've visited a number of local municipalities and district municipalities where their fire services are, let's be blunt, dysfunctional. And where they are working, in many cases, they are not interoperable. In other words, if I have a fire in Bolito and I bring fire engines from Richards Bay, they might not be able to connect to the hydrants. Now, that's a real concern, and what are you doing to standardize across the fire services across South Africa? Just going further with fires, we saw with the Knysna fires the necessity for pre-positioning resources in fire outbreak areas. And I'd welcome some feedback in that regard. And when I say pre-positioning resources, I'm talking about personnel, I'm talking about equipment, both fire engines, helicopters, fuel, et cetera, as required. How far do you go with that? Which then brings me to the next point. If I look at your report, there are two provinces that did not submit reports on their PDMC, being Mpumalanga and Limpopo. But of the other nine, only three were relatively functional. What is the current situation with regard to provincial disaster management centers? And then drilling down, what is the functionality of municipal disaster management centers? How many municipalities are capable of dealing with a disaster at a local level? I am concerned about the speed of response to disasters. Let me use an example, and I dislike comparisons because they tend to be odious, but you know, if you look at the hurricanes in America, they are able to respond within hours. A disaster is declared, resources, personnel, equipment, food, clothing, etc., is deployed almost immediately. Now, I get the feeling from the NDMC, and this goes to a statement that was made when we were discussing the drought up at the Good Hope Center about a month ago, that there are extensive verifications before you will even consider acting on a disaster. So my question is, shouldn't we, once a disaster is declared, and whoever that responsibility is with, be it a mayor or a premier or the minister or the president, once a disaster is declared, shouldn't we then act immediately and verify afterwards? In other words, deal with the situation and then put in place, did we go through all the checks, and if we didn't, why didn't we, and so on and so forth? Because it seems to me that we're putting life at risk, we're putting welfare of people at risk by doing all the verification up front and then trying to respond to the disaster. Which then brings me to the point of the drought. On slide 11. The comment is made that the drought affects all provinces. 2 years ago, in fact 3 years ago, there was a call in this parliament for the drought to be declared a national disaster. No action was taken on that. Now the Act in section 27 makes very specific reference to what a national disaster is. And it would seem to me that this fits perfectly within the category of a national disaster. So why hasn't it been declared a national disaster? Why has our response to it been so tepid, lukewarm? Why is it that the National Disaster Management Center gave back hundreds of millions of rand in unspent grant funds when we have municipalities that have no water. I use, for example, Beaufort West. The dam in Beaufort West is dry. There is no water there. They are tanking water into Beaufort West. And it's not the only municipality where that's the case. And Cape Town, where we are 3 months away from total collapse of the water system. And yet, the response from the National Disaster Management Center seems to be, oh, we must check, oh, we must verify, oh, we must make sure that all the systems are in place first. So I would welcome some input as to why there were hundreds of millions of rands unspent that could have been used to address these situations. And it's not just the Western Cape, it's Gauteng, it's the Eastern Cape, it's KwaZulu-Natal as well. It's the Northern Cape, it's the Free State. But I'm using those as examples. I'd really, really like to understand the thinking that says that it's something that will come down the line. My last question goes to the comment that is made about reprioritization of the provincial disaster recovery grant, where you say no expenditure was incurred due to the reprioritization process by organs of state. As I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, what you're saying is that, well, Department of Water and Sanitation, they found some money to deal with the situation, and Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, they found some money, so we didn't have to put our money in. That's the way I understand it. I could be wrong. But again, we have a situation now where municipalities are looking for resources. They're looking for boreholes. They're looking for pumps. They're looking for water tankers. They are looking for desalination plants. And yet, they don't have the funds to deliver on it, and you guys have given money back to the National Treasury in this situation. I'd really like some answers to those questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to honourable members in the National Disaster Management Team. Chair, I would like to start on page 19, where there is a desalination plant issue. The budget was allocated there. I would like to understand if, because they talk about KwaZulu-Natal, I think I only heard of one, that is in King Cetshwayo and Richards Bay. And that 290.7, if it's millions, I just want to confirm that. If that desalination plant really was funded by this amount. Because I know that there were quite a lot of funders there. A company, I think, it's RBM, they funded. I've got information on how much. Or else there are other desalination plants that we don't know. And then, Chair, Honourable May has covered me partially. I don't know what is making things difficult in the disaster management sector to behave like in the health department, for example. If there is an accident, they don't start about finding the names of the people who are injured on the road. They start by destabilizing them first, take them to hospital, and then in the hospital, that's where they do all the verifications and so on, while assistance is being given. Because what he is saying, a disaster will be declared today, but because of the verification process, it may be attended tomorrow. And, Chair, I want to suggest that maybe we try and localize these disaster management centers. I see that, you know, in local municipalities we do have them. But if we can, you know, disseminate them even into wards, you know, and perhaps try training, you know, even local people, whether it's your ward committees, your indunas and everybody, so that once there is something wrong there, anybody close by the incident can actually try and assist. Chair, I think if I may be assisted on those ones, I'll be quite very happy. Anyway, thank you very much for the report that is being provided to us. We still have more time even to to read this annual report, and perhaps we'll comment about it later, and if we have some inquiries, we'll be glad to pose them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let us allow the team, Doctor, to answer the question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. I'll respond to some of the questions and request my colleagues to fill in. And let me really appreciate the questions and comments, and firstly state that our role, as members are aware, is a coordination role as per Section 9 of the Act, which says the NDMC should ensure an integrated and coordinated system of disaster management with an emphasis on prevention, preparedness, and mitigation. And that the achievement of our role is possible through the work of various sectors. That means the plans that were referred to should be in place and managed by the various sectors, which must respond, prevent risk, and respond in their various areas of responsibility, whether it's health, whether it's human settlements, whether it's outbreak of diseases, and so on and so forth. And also that, as per the Constitution, this is a multi-level function where you have the national center, the provincial center, and the municipal center, with sectors and other role players still coming on board. So that is the principle. With respect to the questions, questions by Honorable Mellon, on the amendment of the Fire Brigade Services Act, indeed that process is still on course, and that currently what is being done is consolidating comments that we received on the white paper on fire services, so that the white paper is informed the new act is informed by the principles spelled out in the policy, which is the white paper. So the work is still a priority for us in that area, and we should be able to provide a briefing in terms of progress in that area. On the dysfunctional fire services, as you know, this is an area of concurrent competence between, you know, the national province and the municipalities, and it is a service issue that also has to be budgeted for by the municipalities. So we work very closely together with the provinces and municipalities in improving the status of fire services. Obviously, due to funding limitations, we are not able to inject funds, but we encourage provision of funding for fire services. And some of the measures that we are undertaking is to assess the capacity of municipalities to undertake fire safety and prevention programs. Last year, we assessed 27, and we give feedback and even come up with interventions such as training, and where there can be donation of fire services equipment, we do leverage that, and it has happened, and my colleague will just provide details if required. The pre-positioning of fire services, I think my answer could have also covered that. Basically, we are trying hard. There's even a collaboration with Santam, which is called a Business Adopt a Municipality, which, amongst others, prioritize the issue of fire services in the municipalities. The submission of reports by non-submission by Mpumalanga and other province, I'll request my colleague Annette to deal with that. And also the situation in the provincial disaster management centers, indeed they vary, and it's because the provincial centers are still within the provincial administration arrangement, and we work hard to advocate for funding of centers so that we have fully operational centers which are also resourced. So their capacity vary because of resource factors, but there's commitment from at MINMEC level to ensure that these provincial centers are supported. The capacity of disaster management centers to respond speedily, as I said, these are cascading institutional arrangement. Response does happen. But as you will note, honorable members, the Disaster Management Act or the function operates within the provision of the PFMA. When there has been an occurrence, it is always important that firstly we check whether reprioritization has been done and the sectors that are affected have done their work. Secondly, whether the damages that are referred to are indeed falling within the category of a disaster. Because in some cases you may find that matters that relate to operations and maintenance are put under the disaster ban, then that becomes a challenge from a PFMA perspective, as service delivery backlog has to be dealt with in terms of the ongoing service delivery programs and disaster damages have to be dealt with accordingly as well. The issue of a declaration, I think we stated in the previous meeting that indeed the scientific information about the nature of the occurrence should inform the decision that has to be taken, and that with or without a declaration, there is still a responsibility that any occurrence that has happened should be dealt with by the relevant sector, and that if there's a need for intervention from national, the requisite procedures and conditions will have to be complied with. But we note the comment, it's quite helpful. And that therefore addressed the issue of funds having been returned. When a sector reprioritizes funds, it means the emergency grant cannot be utilized because they are still using their funds to cater for that. But the emergency grant in terms of the grant framework are determined for specific situations. You can't just divert it for a particular situation, as that will then put you at the loggerheads with the Public Finance Management Act. On the issue of no expenditure incurred, that's the point I've just addressed. Then, Honorable Ngwesi, the issue of the desalination plant, indeed the amount is in millions, and it's for the desalination plant in Richards Bay. Then the last one on my list is the speed of response, like what health does. As we indicated, Honorable Member, once an occurrence has happened, the relevant municipality, if it's a provincial situation, the relevant province, together with affected sectors, will constitute what you call a JOC or a Joint Operation Committee to ensure that they activate their contingency plans to deal with that situation, and will then be receiving the situational reports so that our intervention from national can be spelled out, but we will not be first-line responders so that we don't duplicate efforts. That is the response from our side. Thank you.
This is short with regards to the provinces that did not submit their annual report. From the NDMC side, we every year we send out a circular to all the provinces explaining the process in terms of the legislation, because they have an obligation to report to their councils and also to the premier at municipal level, to their councils, to the premier at provincial level, and then send us a copy of that report. In some cases, they haven't received the sign-off, so then we regarded it, that it is not submitted to us because we haven't received the copy. And in some cases, they have just not complied with the legislation. So we're trying to encourage them to ensure that they do comply, and by also reporting on it in our annual report, we hope that it will help to ensure that they submit next year in time.
Two quick follow-ups. So one was about the standards for fire services and whether or not you would consider promoting a standardized equipment base so that the hose in one municipality fits the hydrant in another municipality and the like. I'll give you a simple example. Buffalo City Metro purchased fire engines from Turkey. There is no one in this country that can service those engines, and the manuals are in Turkish. So they have to bring someone in. Now, if it's a mechanical thing, they can sort it out. But if it's a computerized thing, they have to get someone from Turkey to fly in and fix the computer and. We need to set standards that are understandable and workable in our environment. And I would urge the NDMC to push the minister to develop those standards and regulations. My other question, Chair, my other follow-up, Dr. Tao, you mentioned the PFMA and the fact that utilizing those funds would be contrary to the PFMA, and that's exactly my point. As soon as a disaster is declared, and maybe we need to amend the legislation in this regard, but this is something that needs to be pushed by your office through to Parliament so that we can do the amendment. Amend the legislation that says where a disaster is declared, if it's a local disaster, certain provisions of the MFMA can be waived or bypassed, or it speeds up the process of utilization of funds, that we don't need to go through an adjustment budget to transfer money out of this vote into that vote, or whatever it might mean, that we can utilize it and do that afterwards. And similarly, at a provincial and national level, we can do that for the PFMA. So I would argue that by definition, disaster implies that we need to be able to take radical steps quickly and justify them afterwards. And if we aren't able to justify them, then it must be misconduct. But if we are able to justify them, then it should be allowed to go through and not be irregular or unauthorized or fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
We know what it is. We record the weather. The weather forecast, the weather. now it's clear, it seems we behave as if we never knew that to ask what happened. And I think it's a different problem. But Dr. Reporter can raise in terms of your problems. Which are the problems that are functioning right now? I think it would be a disaster or fire or whatever. And then be able to intervene to the problem to address a human disaster. Because otherwise, what is the use of the remaining structure is there? Of course, I think that one of my members will say, wait for applications that take about 3 months when there's a disaster. I think a disaster and a disaster are somehow not planned. And then I think we must look at this. But I think that the problem is that you say, if a disaster hits more, these provinces will act accordingly, and then they can then assist us to mitigate the impact of these other countries.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. With your indulgence, Chair, I'm going to request Mr. Petru to respond to the question on the standardization of FAR services, including equipment, and Mayor Radikonyana to deal with the question about non-spending that we normally encounter, and Anel Brever, the provinces functionality and what are we doing to support those provinces, and I will deal with the question of readiness of the country generally to deal with disaster situations. That while we acknowledge that we are not a severe disaster prone country, it still remains quite important that we have appropriate systems to manage disasters, both proactively and reactively. And that we have one of the world-renowned piece of legislation in terms of dealing with this, and I think members will also agree in that respect. As a country, we have various institutions that we put in place to coordinate the issue of disaster reduction, as we have mentioned. I think what needs to be heightened, which we think through this platform and other platforms will be achieved, is indeed that the sectors that have got the responsibility towards various risk scenarios should have the necessary capacity, resources, and operational systems to respond when there are incidents. So the forums such as the Intergovernmental Committee on Disaster Management, which the Act calls for, which is a committee of ministers and other stakeholders, is key to really continue to provide leadership in that respect. The National Disaster Management Advisory Forum that we chair and various sub-task teams, including, Chair, our participation in the National Joint Operation and Intelligence Committee called the NET Joints, is also a way of ensuring that we always sharpen our plans to manage any risks that we deal with. So it's a difficult question, but from a legislative point of view, we are geared. There's room for improvement in terms of the operationalization and resources to deal with any disasters. As you know, we are also supporting various countries. We support Mozambique, we support Madagascar, we support various countries in terms of disaster issues. It shows we are at a better level, but of course with room still for improvement. Mr. Petru, on the standard of our services.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Just to comment on the standard, I think the white paper on fire services, the adoption of SAN standard is one of the key policy proposals. And then within the municipalities that we assessed and we supported, we have encouraged them to adopt community protection against fire, South African standard, national standard. We have encouraged them to adopt it. And also we have encouraged them to adopt the 1157, which is SANS on dangerous goods. Because we had a problem that, for example, the city of Tshwane will give fire permits for the transportation of dangerous goods. But when they arrive in Durban, Durban will say, no, we don't take it. So for us to standardize that, if they use the checklist of SANS 1157, so which means in the whole country they will be standard because there will not be the different standard within the country. So I think the white paper, if it is dealt with, the renew, those will it will be addressed. All right. Okay, I think, thank you, Chair. I think the take one is a surprise to me because when we are assessing the municipalities, once we pick it up, is that you find that in the fire services, we have realized that there are people that were appointed that are not, qualified, because before you buy a fire engine, you must have a specification according to your risk within your municipality. So I think for me, the techie one, I don't know how did they manage to buy a fire engine there without looking at the whether it will suit the terrain and everything within our country. So I think this is another thing that we have to look at. The other standard that I forgot to mention was the protective, personal protective clothing for firefighters. It was all imported from America and elsewhere, but we are also busy working on the national standard in that regard with the DTI so that we can have a national standard for PPE for firefighters.
Okay. All right, Chair. Thank you. There's a request for addition from Jochen. So.
Chair, I just want to add another dimension. What we also need to not forget,
it's not only the standardization of the equipment, but standardization also brings into it standardization of manufacture. Meaning that when we procure vehicles, our industry that manufacture locally must be able to adapt to procure or to provide those vehicles. What I have found working in the fire service is that the companies that supply vehicles will not only look at the bottom line when it comes to procuring the vehicle, they look also at the cost of maintaining that vehicle. So in the procurement process, it may be that they are willing to sell the vehicle at a lower cost to be able to make their money on the maintenance of the vehicle over a period of time. And when we look at our procurement mechanisms of fire equipment, and particularly our fire vehicles, there's space for organizations because they know these are assets that will remain in the fire service for 10, 20, 30 years. Their lifespan can, when they are maintained well, run into 30-year period. So there are economic factors that come into the procurement process, and that's why standardization is so important. Because when standardization comes in, it's very difficult for organizations to look at different models on how to actually procure, simply to say that when there's a tender out, I will be able to underrun the local manufacturers because I'm going to make my money on an asset that I know only me can maintain. So that's a key component. And then maybe another aspect that I think is important is that we have world-class manufacturers in our country. Our fire engines are exported all over Africa and even into other places in the world. And standardization will also bring in another factor. The equipment that has been put into our systems, our fire protection systems and all these, are also procured from all over the world. So sometimes it's not simply a system of saying this standard will be the only one. We sometimes have to also think about how we adapt to manufacture mechanisms that when you have a particular hose coupling and another one here that you have an adapter that can fit immediately between the two. And that links to what Dr. Tao was saying. Pre-planning is a critical component. If you do not pre-plan, you will not know that these two facets are not compatible with one another. Pre-planning and exercises are a critical component together with other mechanisms like standardization, supporting local manufacturing and those kind of things.
Chair, I'll request Mayor Radikonyana to respond to the question by Honorable Mteta on reasons for not spending. Mayor Radikonyana.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will just try to also clarify the issue to say that the provinces, the PDMCs, Provincial Disaster Management Centers, are coordinating disaster at that level. Funds are not they are not being transferred directly to the Provincial Disaster Management Centers, but the funds are being transferred to the sector departments within provinces and also to the municipalities. So we have the first phase and the second phase for disaster funding. The first phase is of the emergency, the disaster grants that I've talked to. The municipal disaster grant is specifically for municipalities. And the provincial disaster grant is specifically for provincial organs of state sector departments at the provincial level. And those grants are conditional. They've got conditions attached to that. One, when a disaster happens, it's important that each and every sector must activate its contingency plan, which we are not really getting joy as National Disaster Management Center. And we do the preliminary the assessments to check whether those reports that are submitted to us with those relevant projects, with the projects, qualify within the conditions. So the emergency grant is looking at the immediate needs of the communities as and when, where we cannot live beyond a certain period. Hence, the grant condition, they're saying they should be accessed within 3 months after the declaration, and this must be implemented within 3 months after the funds have been transferred to the organs of state and the municipalities that have been affected. So those grants, as NDMC, we are able to monitor them and ensure that they are implemented because it's about the lives of the people to some extent. And the non-expenditure, we report to National Treasury to assist in, you know, getting these challenges dealt with within those that have received the funding but they have not spent that funding. So the second phase is on the long-term project that takes 6 months to 2 years or 3 years to be implemented, like your roads that needs to be reconstructed or rehabilitated. So we have to do the verification, unfortunately, because if you don't do verification, we end up with infrastructure being overcosted. Two, we end up with infrastructure that is not existent, or we end up with backlogs being squished into the declared disaster. And now it then amounts to double dipping by the organs of state. So we have to do that thorough process to ensure that at the end of the day, it's not double dipping, or you don't find a situation where backlogs are now being repaired or are now being addressed through the disaster funding, whereas there is a specific grant like MIG or RBIC or Water Services Infrastructure Grant that needs to deal with that kind of infrastructure, but then they end up being transferred to our disaster grant. So, unfortunately, it's very difficult for the provinces, especially the PDMCs, on those sectors that are not spending, because funds are being transferred directly to them, and we really need to ensure that what we do, we would then receive the report. If the sector did not report, we then give the report to the National Treasury to assist us in that regard. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. The last on our list is about the functionality of the provincial centers with those examples given. Thank you.
Okay, as the NDMC, we have come up with a kind of a matrix, a checklist, to determine the functionality of disaster management centers, and that is according to how do they implement the legislation. So it is a little bit theoretical because it has a list about 12 criteria to say, you know, did you appoint the head of the center, for instance? Do you have a disaster management plan? All the things that are required in terms of the legislation. So we've broken it down to that, and you know it's almost like a tick box. So according to that, you know we say if they meet all those criteria, they have public awareness, you know within the communities. We look at all those things, and then we kind of determine their functionality, if I can call it like that. But still, that doesn't mean they are responding well to a disaster. If something happens, I think that is when MODI's unit really sees how effective the plans are, how effective the coordination mechanisms are. Do they have the necessary things in place to activate those things that are on paper? So maybe on paper they might be complying with all the, you know, all the legislation, but in practice, when they have to transfer funds or come up with reports when there's a real disaster and make decisions, then it might be a little bit different. So, but from our side, we try to support them with regards to the implementation of legislation, also the understanding of legislation. So we have various workshops across the country in provinces to assist them with this. We also support capacity building and awareness initiatives, and we also develop guidelines that actually makes it even more more accessible for them to understand. But what exactly is required in terms of, for instance, the disaster management plan? What should be part of it? How should you go about to develop the plan? And the very important thing is the institutional mechanisms that you have put in place in the various spheres of government to ensure that you are able to coordinate the to coordinate the measures that is applicable to the specific sphere. So those are the things that we try to assist in terms of developing the necessary mechanisms to be functional. But we have also realized that in many provinces they also have challenges with regards to capacity. In some of the provinces, for a very long time, there has been no head of the center that has been appointed that is required in terms of the legislation, but they just don't have the means to do that. And so we really also try to encourage at other levels that those appointments are made.
Sorry, I didn't catch the lady's name. I apologize. You said that there are criteria and conditions attached to the grants, and I absolutely understand that. But what that implies is that it's going to take time to, A, determine whether or not that grant should be awarded, and, B, the procurement process can be as long as 3 to 6 months for implementation. Now, we're talking about emergency funding. We're talking about disaster funding. And my point earlier was that there needs to be an amendment to the legislation, and I think this is something that the NDMC needs to push for, that where a disaster is declared, those grants are, and I'm talking about the short-term disasters, there needs to be some methodology where we can fast-track procurement and we can fast-track the awarding of funds to an emergency situation. I'm concerned that if we say, oh, well, we need to verify and assess and we need to do this and we need to do that and does it meet all the criteria and the like, we're 6 months down the line before the funds get to the people on the ground. And that's a real problem when we're talking about disaster, where we're talking about floods that have washed people's houses away or fires that have taken people's lives. We need to speed up that process. And that's why I'm suggesting that when a disaster is declared, there needs to be a way of saying that the verification takes place afterwards and that there be accountability for misuse. I get that you don't trust the other organs of state. I get that you don't trust the municipalities. I understand. Trust me. I look at corruption and I look at municipalities and how badly they perform, and I see it every day. But I think that we need to be able to respond and fast-track the resources getting to the people on the ground quicker. Otherwise, why are we doing it? Otherwise, why are we doing it? Exactly what my colleague was saying earlier. When someone gets knocked over by a car, you bandage them, and then afterwards you ask them their name.
Are there additional comments? And there's a question also. No? No further comments? It doesn't seem like there's any other further business. And that being the case, we should move towards closing the meeting. But I'm just worried that the chairperson has left. There may have been things that he may have wished to comment on. Even that's where we are. Let me take this opportunity to thank you very much for attending the meeting and for keeping in touch with the committee. In each and every meeting, there's so much that we learn from one another. We learn from you. I guess you learn a bit from us. Okay. No, thank you very much. Okay.